Today is Wednesday, September 24th, 2025, and you're listening to the World Socialist Website. Trump declares war on the world at UN General Assembly speech. By Keith Jones. U.S. President Donald Trump delivered a fascist rant Tuesday to the 80th session of the United Nations General Assembly, in which he proclaimed, "America first should be the world's organizing principle," threatened war and aggression the world over, and lionized the criminal actions of his administration at home and abroad. He attacked both America's ostensible allies and states long in Washington's military strategic crosshairs, in a meandering speech that lasted almost triple his allotted time. Trump reveled in displaying his disdain and contempt for international law, making clear that Washington will accept no restraints on the ruthless assertion of its imperialist interest, whether through trade war, assassinations, regime change operations, or global war. He cited as models for the world key elements in his ongoing drive to establish a presidential dictatorship, such as the occupation of Washington by National Guard troops and the assault on immigrants. Trump blamed the UN and its globalist agenda for much, if not most, of humanity's problems. He charged that the UN, through its limited programs to aid the refugees created by imperialist wars and oppressions, is, quote, funding an assault on Western countries, effectively expounding from the UN rostrum the white supremacist Great Replacement theory. The UN, he declared, is supposed to stop invasions, not create them, and not finance them, end quote. He excoriated America's traditional European allies for not being aggressive enough in restricting immigration and expelling immigrants, and for seeking to limit greenhouse gas emissions and climate change, the, quote, greatest con job in history. Europe is in serious trouble. They've been invaded by a force of illegal aliens like nobody has ever seen before. Both the immigration and suicidal energy ideas will be the death of Western Europe, said Trump. Trump blithely ignored the genocide of the Palestinians, appropriately enough given American imperialism's role in arming Israel to the teeth and his own incitement of the Netanyahu regime to pursue the complete ethnic cleansing of Gaza with his Riviera of the Middle East plan. Even as Israel starves and bombards the people of Gaza and invades Gaza City with the aim of leveling it, Trump railed about Hamas's atrocities. He boasted of the illegal war the U.S. and Israel waged on Iran last June, during which the U.S. first drew Tehran into a trap by pretending it wanted to pursue peace talks, then amplified the initial Israeli attacks with a massive assault on Iranian civil nuclear facilities. Today, gloated Trump, most of Iran's military commanders are no longer with us. They are dead. End quote. The U.S. president also used his U.N. speech to continue Washington's preparations to invade Venezuela as part of its drive to push back against growing Chinese influence in South America. In recent weeks, U.S. military forces have blown up two boats off the coast of Venezuela, killing at least 17 people, on the totally unsubstantiated claim that they were trafficking drugs. But even if that were true, no government outside of war has the right to summarily execute people. Yet Trump, flaunting his government's recourse to criminal violence and pretending to be addressing anyone transporting drugs from Venezuela, declared before the General Assembly, "We will blow you out of existence." End quote. Trump, in his remarks before the UN and social media posts after a subsequent meeting with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, also escalated U.S. threats against Russia. Not only did he blame Putin and Russia for the continuation of the US-NATO-instigated Ukraine war, and threatened Moscow with far more aggressive economic sanctions, Trump declared, quote, "I think Ukraine, with the support of the European Union, is in a position to fight and win all of Ukraine back in its original form," end quote. Media reports in the run-up to the UN General Assembly largely focused on the supposedly landmark recognition of a Palestinian state by a number of Western countries, including France, Britain, Canada, and Australia. This maneuver, vociferously opposed by Trump, was born of fear of the radicalizing impact the ongoing genocide is having in the working class and youth of the imperialist centers and the Middle East, and constitutes a desperate attempt on the part of the likes of France's Macron, Britain's Starmer, and Canada's Carney to cover up their deep and ongoing complicity. It is entirely consistent with the European powers' simultaneous ratcheting up of the bellicose threats against Russia. These include vows to shoot down Russian warplanes should they, again, stray into NATO airspace, a claim Moscow denies. During the first 9 months of the second Trump presidency, two interlinked goals have driven establishment politics in Germany, France, and Britain. First, disrupting Trump's efforts to reach an accommodation with Moscow to end the Ukraine war over their heads and at their expense. And second, massively increasing military spending so they can secure the military power to pursue their imperialist interest independently of, and if need be, in opposition to the United States. Rearmament and war with Russia will require a massive assault on the working class, as presaged in the declaration last month by the new German Chancellor Friedrich Merz, that, quote, "the welfare state as we know it today is no longer economically sustainable," end quote. They will also, necessarily, entail a turn to authoritarian methods of rule and the bringing of the far right into the corridors of power, for precisely the same reason the U.S. oligarchy has turned to Trump: the militarization of society and the elimination of what remains of the social rights of the working class to pay for war will encounter mass working class opposition. These processes are already far advanced, as exemplified by the ruling class's promotion of the noxious anti-immigrant propaganda on which the far right feeds, and their smearing and repression of anti-genocide protesters by many of the same governments now posing as concerned about the national rights of the Palestinians. Trump's fascist rant before the UN stunned the assembly government leaders and senior diplomats. Quote, "6 years ago, Trump's UN audience laughed. This year, they were silent," announced a BBC headline. This is not because Trump is all-powerful. On the contrary, he personifies the decline and depravity of U.S. imperialism, world capitalism's bulwark since World War II, and still the center of world finance and the cockpit of global counter-revolution. The reality is the United Nations is collapsing, as the League of Nations did in the run-up to World War II, and for the same fundamental reasons. Faced with a systemic crisis, the rival imperialist powers are seeking to violently repartition the world so as to secure control over critical resources, markets, production networks, and strategic territories. Led by U.S. imperialism and the fascist gangster Trump, any pretense of legality is being dispensed with, and the law of the jungle, might makes right, violently asserted. Trump himself mocked the UN for its impotence and irrelevance. Within the system of capitalist interstate relations and establishment politics, there is no means of opposing war and the rapid descent into a global conflagration. Putin and Z head capitalist restoration regimes that ruthlessly exploit the workers of Russia and China and oscillate between reaching an accommodation with the imperialist powers at the expense of the masses and reactionary military threats and adventures. As Leon Trotsky incisively explained, to oppose imperialist wars and capitalist barbarism, the working class must look not to the war map, but to the map of the class struggle. The same processes that are driving the capitalist powers to war are fueling social revolution. The critical task is to infuse the growing struggle against war, austerity, dictatorship, and fascism with a socialist perspective and arm them with a revolutionary leadership. That is a task to which the World Socialist website and the International Committee of the Fourth International and its affiliated socialist equality parties are dedicated. Top Democrats plead for meeting with fascist Trump as government shutdown looms, by Barry Gray. On Tuesday, President Donald Trump abruptly canceled the White House meeting, announced the previous day with Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and White House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries. The meeting had been billed as an attempt to avert a government shutdown when the new fiscal year begins on Wednesday, October 1st. In a fascistic rant, Trump wrote on his social media platform Truth Social, quote, "After reviewing the details of the unserious and ridiculous demands being made by the minority radical left Democrats in return for their votes to keep our thriving country open, I have decided that no meeting with their congressional leaders could possibly be productive. They are threatening to shut down the government of the United States unless they can have over $1 trillion in new spending to continue free health care for illegal aliens, a monumental cost, force taxpayers to fund transgender surgery for minors, have dead people on the Medicaid rolls, allow illegal alien criminals to steal billions of dollars in American taxpayer benefits, try to force our country to again open our borders to criminals and to the world, allow men to play in women's sports, and essentially create transgender operations for everybody. All congressional Democrats want to do is enact radical left policies that nobody voted for. High taxes, open borders, no consequences for violent criminals." End quote. Trump held open the possibility of a meeting if the Democrats capitulated in advance. He insisted that they support a Republican continuing resolution along the lines of that passed by the House last Friday to extend funding for the federal government through November 21st. He wrote, "I'll be happy to meet with them if they agree to the principles in this letter." Schumer made clear the supine posture of the Democrats. He criticized Trump for running away from the negotiating table before he even gets there, and added, "Democrats are ready to work to avoid a shutdown." The Democrats are desperate to maintain funding for a fascist administration that is waging war on democratic rights and on the social conditions and jobs of the working class. Schumer's statement came just 2 days after Trump and his cabinet headlined a Christian fascist rally in Phoenix to honor far-right Republican operative Charlie Kirk, a racist anti-Semite and supporter of authoritarian rule. At the rally, Trump, Vice President J.D. Vance, White House Deputy of Chief of Staff Stephen Miller, and others called for war against the left and all critics of the Trump administration. Trump reiterated his intention to send troops into Chicago and other U.S. cities to crack down on social opposition and back up his campaign of mass raids and deportations against immigrants. The rally also followed the direct intervention of the Trump government to suspend the Jimmy Kimmel late-night show, and threats to rescind broadcast licenses for all media outlets that criticize Trump. The Democrats and aligned pseudo-left organizations, such as the Democratic Socialists of America, have remained virtually silent on Sunday's rally. The first time in U.S. history such a gathering of fascists was organized by a sitting government. Last week, the Senate voted unanimously for a resolution making October 14th, Kirk's birthday, a national day of remembrance. Not one senator, including Bernie Sanders, objected. In the House, 90 Democrats, including the party's leadership, voted with the Republican to pass a resolution, quote, honoring the life and legacy of the fascist Kirk. The Democrats seek to chloroform the population about the seriousness of the assault on democratic rights and the erection of a presidential dictatorship. On Friday, the House passed its funding measure in a 217-212 vote, with two Republicans voting against and one Democrat voting in favor. Later that day in the Senate, where 60 votes are required to surmount the filibuster rule and pass legislation, the House measure was voted down, 44-48, with two Republicans voting no and one Democrat, John Fetterman of Pennsylvania, voting in favor. A Democratic counterbill calling for the reversal of $800 billion in Medicare cuts included in Trump's tax and spending bill enacted in July, and an extension of Affordable Care Act subsidies in return for extending federal funding through October 31st, failed, with 47 in favor and 45 opposed. Both the House and the Senate are adjourned for the Jewish holidays, with the Senate slated to return on September 29th. House Speaker Mike Johnson extended the House recess until October 1st to place additional pressure on the Democrats to come to terms. The Democrats' demand to reverse the Medicaid cuts is pure bluster. They have since signaled that they're more serious about extending the ACA subsidies, which are set to expire at the end of this year. They're pursuing this as a face-saving measure to provide cover for their capitulation and complicity with the Trump regime. Last March, when a funding deadline was at hand, Schumer reversed himself and threw his support behind a Republican continuing resolution to keep the Trump administration running. He brought behind him 9 other Senate Democrats to pass the measure, underscoring the Democrats' complicity in Trump's anti-democratic and anti-social rampage. The vote highlighted the fact that both parties represent the corporate financial oligarchy that runs the country and determines government policy. Since the Democrats' green light to Trump in March, the administration has escalated its rampage against democratic rights and the social conditions of the working class. It has deployed troops to Los Angeles, including active-duty Marines and militarily occupied Washington, D.C., with National Guard troops, all in violation of the Posse Comitatus law. It has imposed tariffs, driving up consumer prices and wiping out thousands of jobs. It has fired regulatory agency officials in order to gut restrictions on corporate profit-making at the expense of the safety, health, and very lives of workers. A federal shutdown would mean the suspension of many government operations deemed non-essential and furloughs for hundreds of thousands of government workers. Thousands of other federal workers would be required to work without pay until funding resumes. Essential services such as border protection, law enforcement, air traffic control, and in-hospital medical care would continue. Social Security checks, Medicare, and Medicaid would continue, but with limited support staff. Trump would gain temporary discretion over which functions persist during the shutdown, allowing him to restructure or eliminate agencies and programs. The Democrats are desperate to avoid a government shutdown, not out of concern for the social dislocation caused by worker furloughs and halted or reduced government services, but for fear that a shutdown, coming in the midst of rising public anger over government policies, will trigger mass social resistance from below. The Democratic Party does not call for impeachment and opposes a struggle to bring down the Trump regime. It fears the emergence of a revolutionary movement of workers against capitalism, not fascism and dictatorship. As the Socialist Equality Party explained in its statement, posted last week on the World Socialist website, Trump's Fascist Conspiracy and How to Fight It, a Socialist Strategy. Quote, the correct identification of the source of Trump's war against the working class leads to critical political conclusions. The starting point for any serious struggle against dictatorship is a break with the Democratic Party. To rely on the Democratic Party to oppose Trump is to guarantee defeat. End quote. The statement called for the formation of rank-and-file committees in the factories, job sites, and neighborhoods to break the grip of the trade union bureaucracies and coordinate an industrial and political struggle by the working class to defend democratic rights by bringing down the Trump government, expropriating the corporate oligarchy, and implementing socialist policies. Mass protest in Brazil against amnesty for Bolsonaro's fascist coup attempt by Guilherme Ferreira. Brazil witnessed massive nationwide demonstrations on Sunday, September 21st, opposing the efforts of the political establishment to politically rehabilitate and overturn the conviction of former President Jair Bolsonaro and his military and civilian co-conspirators in the January 8, 2023 fascist coup attempt. The protests were prompted by last week's approval of two measures in the Brazilian House of Representatives demanded by the fascist political opposition associated with Bolsonaro as part of what they call a National Pacification Package. On Wednesday, by a vote of 311 to 163, the House approved the expedited voting procedure for a bill to amnesty those who are convicted and who are under investigation for the January 8th coup attempt. On the same day, it approved a constitutional amendment bill dubbed the PEC da Blindagem, Shielding Amendment, which prohibits the criminal prosecution of members of parliament and party presidents without congressional authorization. Mass opposition is being driven by the perception among broad sections of the Brazilian population that the corrupt bourgeois political system is striking a criminal compromise behind their backs to preserve the power of the forces exposed for conspiring to overthrow democracy and reimpose a military dictatorship. These sentiments were widely displayed in Sunday's protest. In the demonstrations, which took place in virtually every major city in the country, demonstrators held signs calling the president of the House of Representatives, Hugo Mota, an enemy of the people, and chanted, "No amnesty and no forgiveness. I want to see Bolsonaro in prison." In Sao Paulo and Rio de Janeiro, where the largest demonstrations occurred, more than 40,000 people took to the streets. Renowned artists had a prominent role both in the promotion of the demonstrations and giving speeches and musical performances, which was also characteristic of the historic protest against the U.S.-backed military dictatorship from 1964 to 1985 in Brazil. The protest in Rio had the participation of legendary figures of Brazilian popular music, such as Chico Buarque, Caetano Veloso, and Gilberto Gil, all of them imprisoned and exiled under the dictatorship and now in their 80s. As demonstrators shouted, "No amnesty and long live democracy," they sang the song Calice, Chalice in Portuguese, which is pronounced the same as Shut Up. Composed by Gil and Chico, an anthem of the struggle against the military dictatorship. The turnout at these demonstrations exceeded the expectations of the ruling Partido dos Trabajadores, the PT, the pseudo-left Socialism and Liberty Party, the PSOL, and the unions and social movements they control, which initially called for them. In what were considered the largest demonstrations of a left-wing character in recent years, they spontaneously attracted a crowd that far exceeded that of September 7th Brazilian Independence Day demonstrations called by these same political forces. There, they sought to subordinate all political and social opposition to the defense of national sovereignty against Trump's tariffs and for the so-called popular agenda of the Lula administration, oriented to reversing the decline in its approval rating. The agenda included an income tax exemption for those earning up to 5,000 real per month and a reduction of working hours. More importantly, the protests expressed widespread social, economic, and political dissatisfaction, which has also fueled mass protest around the world. Recent years have also seen an increasing number of strikes, particularly by federal public workers against the Lula government's austerity policies. Faced with this social powder keg, and unable to offer any real solutions to the problems faced by the Brazilian working class, the entire Brazilian ruling class viewed Sunday's protest with concern. It fears that these protests will become the spark for a massive movement from below, outside the control of the nominal left and the union it controls, that threatens the fragile bourgeois regime in Brazil, of which the PT is a fundamental pillar. Against this threat, the PT is doing everything it can to prevent the growing discontent of the Brazilian population and the consequent explosion of protests and strikes from getting out of control. It is seeking to divert this movement behind calls for pressuring Congress to put its popular agenda on the table and forming a new bourgeois broad front for next year's general election. The palace negotiations within the discredited Congress last week also widely exposed the PT, which rushed to minimize the dangers and prevent popular outrage from turning against the Lula government. On Thursday, the daily Estado de São Paulo reported that Lula had advocated light amnesty in a meeting with allied parties, which includes the possibility of reducing sentences for those convicted of the coup attempt in exchange for a better position to negotiate its agenda in Congress. Equally damning, 12 PT deputies, about 20% of the PT's total representation in the Chamber of Deputies, voted in favor of the shielding amendment on Wednesday. In various demonstrations across Brazil, they were denounced as alleged traitors to the PT. Explaining the spurious behind-the-scenes negotiations in the chamber, Glide Andrade, finance secretary of the PT, stated on Thursday, quote, "The first thing we have to do is to be fair to history and to the people. The 12 who voted in favor of the shielding amendment voted because they followed instructions, and halfway through, some of them, when they saw the reaction on social media, changed their minds. Those 12 are being crucified." She continued, "I followed everything closely, and the national president of the PT, Edino Silva, said so. So yes, there was an agreement. Because of the breach of this agreement, the chamber voted for a broad and unrestricted amnesty." End quote. Despite this, the PT and the pseudo-left around it saw Sunday's protest as a turning point for the Lula government, advancing a clear intention to channel them into bourgeois politics. The PT president welcomed Sunday's protest on X, writing that, "I am on the side of the Brazilian people," and that "the National Congress must focus on the measures that benefit the Brazilian people," end quote. Similarly, PSOL leader Guilherme Boulos said at the protest in Sao Paulo that "today is a historic day because the Brazilian left has regained its leading role in the streets." He also demanded that the president of the chamber put Lula's government bills on the agenda this week. Revealing where he wants to divert the protest, Boulos said that one of the results of the Brazilian people taking back to the streets will be, quote, "electing Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva as president of Brazil next year." The other, according to him, is, quote, "electing the largest left-wing bloc in the Brazilian Congress, doing the whole job, electing Lula and winning in Congress," end quote. With Trump's tariffs against Brazil, the PT and PSOL are also trying to forge a bankrupt link between the popular agendas and the reactionary defense of nationalism. Boulos repeated that Sunday's demonstrations were attended by those who truly defend Brazil. We are the true patriots. In Sao Paulo, the protests also featured a huge Brazilian flag, in contrast to the American flag present at the rally of Bolsonaro supporters on September 7th. The defense of nationalism, however, has nothing to do with defending the interests of the Brazilian working class, which shares common economic and political interests with the international working class, including in the United States. With their defense of national sovereignty, the PT, PSOL, and the unions they control are promoting the interest of Brazilian capitalism. Their response to the crisis is the promotion of national unity, of the Brazilian bourgeoisie, and a bankrupt multipolar solution to the crisis of imperialism. As the PT made clear in a document from late August, quote, "The fight against imperialism, allied with Bolsonaro's extreme right, fascism, and neoliberalism, must take place on two complementary fronts. Through popular mobilizations in the streets and on social media, and through the construction of broad national and international alliances, also articulated at the institutional and diplomatic levels. Given this situation, it is imperative that we place at the center of our actions the construction of a broad alliance in defense of sovereignty and democracy under the leadership of President Lula. In each state of Brazil, we will work to form powerful coalitions that strengthen President Lula's re-election campaign, guarantee a majority in the Senate and the House of Representatives, and support the national development project that is already underway." End quote. The failure of this perspective could not be clearer. At the national level, this broad front includes, as PT President Edino Silva has already made clear, the same parties that voted en masse in favor of the Shielding Amendment and the Amnesty Bill. Internationally, the PT wants to strengthen relations with imperialist governments in Europe and the Democratic Party in the US, whose policies of austerity, repression, and support for genocide in Gaza have paved the way for the far right around the world. As last Saturday's statement by the Socialist Equality Party, the SCP, in the US stressed, quote, "The working class cannot defend its jobs and interests by supporting economic nationalism, which is utterly reactionary in an era of global integration of production." End quote. The PT's promotion of reactionary nationalist illusion leads only to defeat. Throughout the world, the profound corruption of the capitalist political order, the deepening of austerity policies, and the drive by the ruling class toward dictatorship and war are fundamental characteristics of a global capitalist system marked by growing crisis. You can find all this and more at the World Socialist website, wsws.org. This has been Archie Stone for the World Socialist website.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.